Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today, Bob Tomich, senior lecturer in the UW-Madison and Extension Department of Horticulture. So happy to have him back. And certainly if you have a question, we can deal with flowers and trees and all kinds of things. You are most welcome to join in. Here's the number, 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Bob, welcome back. Nice to have you with us.
It's always good to be here.
Kind of dry in many parts of Wisconsin right now.
It is dry down here in the southern part. We had our program this morning with the ag agents, and Spooner had about 4 inches this last week or so.
Oh, boy.
And Pierce County had about 3 inches, so mosquitoes are probably about 2 weeks behind.
Well, I bet you they're starting to bite up there.
It was very dry. Their lawns were turning brown a week ago. Yeah. I was up there working at the Spooner Research Station, and everything was just waiting for water. So, and they were very dry last summer, so they're going to see a number of pest problems on their trees, like borers starting to come in on birch and some of the oaks and that.
Well, I'll tell you what, every one of our lines is filled, so let's go to the phones here and see what's up. David in Green Bay's first. Hi, David. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks a lot for taking the call.
Sure.
I had some apple trees last year that developed, I think it was scab, leaves curling up, browning or whatever, and the fruit was all damaged. I don't know if it was also apple maggot, but in any event, this year I decided to do the non-organic approach, and I used dormant oil. At first I pruned in late March, then I used some dormant oil spray on them per the extension bulletin, then applied Captain later on, again at the stages that the bulletin recommended. And the funny thing is that three of the five trees didn't bloom at all. There's no blossoms formed. And then I had also sprayed a plum tree and a self-pollinating plum, and that one last year had produced about 15 fruit. It's pretty young. This year, not one blossom. And I'm just wondering if there was any correlation between the sprays that I used on these trees and the fact that I didn't get any blossoms and fruit.
I highly doubt it was the pesticides you were using. The trees you just described often go into what we call biennial bearing. Certain apple trees are very characteristic of this, where they have a very heavy flower and fruit crop 1 year, and then the following year they have very little. That's one thing. And if you didn't see any petals at all, I would tend to say that would be the situation. The other thing we also saw this past year when we had that warm spell and then we had the Easter cold, sometimes some of the flower buds were damaged on some of the trees. We were kind of watching across the state. We expected a lot more, but really did not see it. To the south of us, Illinois, Missouri had a very severe problem. I believe they're forecasting only a 5% apple crop in Missouri and no plum crop as a result of that snap of cold weather we had at Easter. So it might have had a little impact of that, but I'm guessing the biennial bearing issue. Next year, there should be plenty of blooms. One thing you can do to compensate for that is do a little bit of fruit thinning on the apples and the plums when they do have a heavy crop, and do that fairly early, probably around the 1st of June. And you can even hand thin if it's in your backyard. And this will tend to stimulate better flower production, which usually happens about the middle of June for the following year.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Dave, for calling. Appreciate it. Peter in Soldier's Grove, we'll go to you now. Hi, Peter.
Hi. I've got a question about hostas. My wife has quite a few hostas around the house, which she likes to mulch every year or two. I was wondering if I could mulch them in the spring before they come up, and would they come up through the mulch?
If you used only about 3 or 4 inches of mulch, they should push their way through. If you look at the hostas, when they first begin to emerge, that leaf is in such a tight spiral, it's almost like a little spear coming up. So they should push their way through that mulched area.
Okay. One other question, if I may. I believe it was last year you guys were talking about a home recipe for, you mix it up, it had a banana in it, banana peel, some other things. You put it around in jugs around apple trees to keep some bugs away.
Well, that wasn't my recommendation on that one. About the only thing you're going to attract there is, with that sweet odor, is a lot of picnic beetles, which will come in and feed. Also, some of the Asian lady beetles might come in later in the season, but that's nothing that I would be recommending.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Sharon in Twin Lakes, it's your turn. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
I have a couple of questions about my Austrian pines. They suffered because of the drought we've been having, and so they dropped a lot of needles. Do needles grow back? That's the first question.
Okay, the needles, okay, on all evergreens, people figure that needles last forever, and they do not.
Yeah.
They have a life of about a year and a half, and usually the needle drop happens sometime during the summer, and that's the older needles out on the twig. What you should be seeing now is new growth, and are you seeing that new green growth?
Well, somewhat, but I've seen a lot of healthy Austrian pines on other properties, but mine are a little skimpy looking.
The other thing is, have you looked very closely at the Austrian pine? We've had a very severe outbreak this year of sawflies on, especially Austrian pine. We'll see it on Mughal pine, where they feed on last year's needles and eat it prematurely.
I'm familiar with that pest. No, we don't have those here.
Okay. I guess what I'm saying is that your trees probably were stressed. About the best thing you can do is place them on a good watering program this year and hopefully stimulate some new growth, and that'll tend to fill that tree out
to a greater extent. So it can fill out. That's what I was worried about.
As long as there's green tissue there.
Now, yes,
one thing with evergreens, people sometimes will cut a branch, and that's where the growth stops. Whereas on a deciduous tree, we usually have suckers and other things develop and fill in that area. That's why we can use hedge trimmers on some of our deciduous shrubs and have plenty of growth. On an evergreen, if you cut too far back below this current season's growth, it's just going to brown out.
Okay, so there's hope.
Yep.
Yeah. The other question is, occasionally I'll get under the trees to pull weeds, and there's like a good half a foot to a foot of thick of needles, you know, that drop every year. And when I pull back that bed, that roll of needles, I notice a moldy smell and sometimes a white powdery stuff. Is that bad?
That's just normal decomposition
normal?
Of the
okay.
leaf of the needles. Making compost for you.
Oh, good. So that's a good thing. Oh, good. All right, so I have nothing to worry about then.
Well, thanks, Sharon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Appreciate it. Joya in Fitchburg, your turn now. Hi, Joya.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for having him.
Sure.
Hi. I have three questions. One is the Spear of Van Houty, which I have. It's almost done blooming. Now, people tell that we should cut the Van Houty immediately after blooming. Or should I wait until fall?
You're talking about just pruning it to make a smaller statured shrub?
Right, some smaller stature.
The reason we encourage pruning right after blossom or petal blossom drop, or as they senesce or ripen, is that the next season flower buds are going to be initiated about 2 weeks from now. And so if you do your pruning right now, the existing plant material that is there will initiate the flowers, and so you really don't miss a good flower crop on those plants.
Next year, okay. Then the other question is, I have some, oriental lily seeds, but I understand now it's kind of hot. So should I wait until fall to put them in the ground?
Did you harvest those last year from the plant?
Yeah,
Usually with those, the best thing to do as soon as you harvest those seeds is to place them back in the ground. They often require a moist environment to break down that seed dormancy in the plant. If you leave, some people will collect those seeds, store them up in the cupboard someplace where it's dry, and that's actually a detriment to those seeds. So you can try placing them in the ground now, see what happens. I often mark the area if I'm going to be doing something like that, so you know whatever's coming up is what you planted there. But I would encourage you next year to take the seeds right after you harvest those and place them back in the ground, cover them with a half inch of compost, and hopefully they'll germinate the following spring. There's also, I do a little literature search on that just to get a better clarification, but lily seeds are fairly easy to grow if you treat them properly.
No, and then where do I do the literature search? Should I go on the extension website?
I would start there. Growing lilies, there are several.
Google search.
Poppies, did you say?
Yeah, poppies.
Oh, poppies.
Yeah, oriental poppies.
Oh, I misunderstood,
okay,
too.
Okay, I had oriental lilies.
No, I'm sorry.
Poppies.
Poppy.
Poppy is the same way. They need that, as soon as the seeds ripen, place them back in the ground because they need that chilling period over the winter months to grow. A lot of the poppies, there will be some germinate from seeds, but a lot of that is asexual propagation where the roots tend to spread out rhizomes and that type of thing, and then we have new growth from that.
Yeah, but the people in nursery tell me it needs a cool soil, so they said, you know, wait until the fall. That's why I'm asking this question.
That's fine. The seeds you harvest last year probably will not be as healthy for germination. You have a low germination percentage. But the seeds you harvest this summer, sometime in August, you should be placing them back out to where you want to germinate them. So as the cooler temperatures come about, they will go through their beginning stages of germination.
Okay. And third question is quickly, can you tell me what should I do? My sedum is going in the wrong direction. So it's coming in the driveway instead of going above. So can I just, transplant them? Will they be grow
yep.
there?
Yes, they should transplant. Of course, the best time to transplant is either early in the spring when growth starts or in the fall, usually in September through October.
So in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thanks. All right. Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And on to Ben in Neenah. Ben, hello to you.
How you doing?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Just a quick question for you guys. We've had some hollyhocks in our garden here, and every year these they come up, and the leaves are full of holes, and I don't know what's causing that. If there's a little bug or something or some sort of a disease of some sort, can you help me out on that?
We've got two problems with hollyhocks. Let me ask, is there a browning before the hole emerges, or you see the hole?
No.
Okay.
No.
The browning would be essence of a rust. That's a fungal disease. That's very common on hollyhocks, and one of the things to avoid that part is to space out your plants, in other words, thin them out so that there's air movement through there. It'll reduce some of the disease problems. There's also some fungicides you can use there. I am suspecting what you have is some type of insect injury. You have to make a decision if you're going to use some type of insecticide on ornamentals. Oftentimes, by the time you see the holes, whatever caused it are probably there and gone. But write down the date so that you're looking about 2 weeks earlier for next year, and then
okay.
you can sometimes spot. It could be larvae. It could be insects. Just having holes is hard to tell. I'm guessing also what you see is some of the older leaves or those lower on the plant show more holes than some of the newer leaves that have emerged.
But right now they're just coming up, and they're only about a foot high, and these normally get, you know, three or 4 or 5 feet high, and usually it's an ongoing problem. And by the end of the summer, I have no leaves left, nothing but the skeleton. Of the leaf structures.
There are some skeletonizers. And with that type of problem, there are some materials that are out there, the insecticides that do work fairly well. Apply it when the plants are green, not when they're flowering, because then you're damaging our insect pollinators. So
I understand that.
Yep. All right, good luck.
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. Beverly in Marshfield, we'll come to you in just a minute. Just to remind everybody, though, you are listening to Garden Talk. Bob Tomich, senior lecturer in the UW-Madison and Extension Horticulture Department, our guest, Jim Packard, our producer, Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with Bob Tomich, who is a senior lecturer in the UW-Madison and Extension Horticulture Department. Glad to have him here and happy to have you listening in. Let's go back to the phones. And Beverly in Marshfield, it's your turn. Hi, Bev.
This is me.
Thanks for calling.
Okay. Thank you. About a week ago, I was out to my rhubarb patch, and I saw one of the stalks had all these white flowers. Like little tiny lilacs, only they're white.
Yep.
And obviously that is going to seed. What I'm curious is, would they be poisonous to eat, to put in a pudding or anything?
The flowers, you mean?
Yeah.
I'm not sure on the flowers. I know the leaves are what carry the
oxalic acid.
Well,
that's what I was curious about. I know the leaves you have to be very careful of. But you don't know anything about the seeds.
Nope.
We'll have to think about it. Maybe somebody will call in with an answer on that one.
Okay, well, then the other thing is, should I dry those flowers, and then could I plant them and then hope to get a new rhubarb plant?
Well, I would split the rhubarb plant that you have. That's the best way to propagate rhubarb.
That'd be easier.
Just a couple words on flowers. They will form seeds, and the seeds are so small they're like dust.
Oh.
Very, very tiny, and the first year or two that you spread out those seeds, you have to really babysit them to bring the plant along. And then you're not sure if they're going to be as good. because there are some of the old varieties tend to have more pungent type stems that we consume. I should call them petioles. And so they're not going to be like mom because you're not sure where the pollen came from.
So it's better to just split the plant. Do I do that? With a shovel?
Usually
snap it down and take out a couple of stalks?
Well, the best time to do that is in the fall after we've had frost.
In the fall, okay.
Or early in the spring, just before they begin to grow, and then split up the rhubarb.
Okay.
There's usually some pretty good literature on dividing rhubarb plants.
Okay. Now, I just heard this person talking about hollyhocks.
Yes.
I was curious now. We used to have them when I was a child growing up, and I tried taking some seeds from some other plants from some neighbors, and nothing ever came up. Now, do they need to be in a shade or a sun, or what do I do to make those seeds grow?
Okay. Well, hollyhocks like full sun.
Full sun, okay.
Right. And the seeds, if you harvest those in the fall, the best thing to do is plant them again in the fall. The hollyhock, at least some of the older varieties, and there's been a lot of breeding that has taken place with hollyhocks over the years. The older varieties were definite biennials. In other words, they produced a rosette of leaves the first year. In the second year, they sent up a flower stalk. Some of the newer varieties actually go from seed to flowers all in one season. So it depends on their internal genetics. But if you get seeds from someone, plant it right away in the fall and kind of mark those spots, because those little rosettes are going to be fairly small early on in the season, and we sometimes lop them off with a hoe thinking they're weeds.
Oh, I just love them, but you don't see people planting them anymore. It seems like it's a lost art.
Well, some of that were those immigrants that came back in the early 1900s, and they with them carried hollyhocks were one of their favorite ones, lilacs, roses, and some of the old opium poppies they even brought
in. I have such fond memories of hollyhocks when I was growing up, and neighborhood seems to plant them anymore. Well, you've been very, very kind. I'm so thankful that you have this program on.
Thanks a lot, Beverly, for calling. Appreciate it very much. Thank you. And you can join in, too, if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Let's go to Rhonda in Cedarburg next. Rhonda, hello to you.
Hi, I love your show.
Thank you.
I'm calling because I have a slope in my front yard that the top of it, all the vegetation is eroded away. So I need something that I can plant up there that's going to be really hardy, that's also inexpensive to plant, and that can be walked on, because we use that area to get, you know, to walk in. So I need something that can be walked on, but I don't want grass, anything but grass.
Tough one there.
I know.
Usually,
not sticky or anything.
Yeah. There are some of the tall fescues, or some of the fescues that they use in roadside ditches, that only get about 12 inches tall at the highest during their growing period. And I know John Steyer would suggest some of those types of plants.
And what are they called?
They're tall. It's a type of grass. It's a tall fescue or rough fescue. You might want to try some of that.
What do you think about thyme?
Well, thyme is going to, it's going to look good and smell good, but sometimes it's subjected to some winter injury.
Okay.
So there are very few things other than grass that you can walk on regularly that are going to stand that abuse, usually because of the walking action, you're crushing some of those stems and that. And so that's why they often suggest going with some of those other rough fescues. At one time, they even talked about using crown vetch and some of that. They've gotten away from that because it can be a little bit invasive. At least it's on the invasive list because it does spread out. But with that, it provided a ground cover, but it really would not handle any walking, because as you walk through it, you'd again crush the stems and you'd have dead spots.
Well, I thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. And, you know, I went online quickly here to check on Beverly's question about rhubarb flowers. And what I have here says that you can obviously eat the rhubarb stems, but not the leaves, roots, or flowers. So apparently
we solved that one.
We solved that one thanks to our search engine. Okay, from Yard and Garden magazine. Let's go back to the phones and to Terry and Custer. Terry, hello to you.
Hi, Bob. Hi, Larry.
Hi.
I have a controversy about picking wild asparagus that maybe you can help me with. A friend of mine, when you're picking, sometimes you get out there and you're a little too late to really pick them, and they've already started to go to flower and going to seed. And this person is telling me that you're better off just breaking those off, and they will sprout a new sprout coming up. But I'm thinking, why not leave them go to seed so they'll regenerate in the future?
Well, just to get back to those wild ones, your friend is right. You can break those off, but then you're going to have to make your weekly visits there to harvest the new spears that are coming up. Generally, when it comes to asparagus, whether it's a wild-type plant that you're selecting from or from your own backyard, you can continue harvesting those spears until they are down to about the size of a pencil diameter. After that, let them grow, and those fronds are going to provide carbohydrates to reestablish that storage root system, so you have a healthier crop next year. So you can break those off. When you do break off, the plant itself, when it sends up 3-4 fronds, it stops producing those spears. And there's probably another 15 or 20 down in there that never develop because of hormonal things that take place with the plant itself. So by breaking it off, what you're doing is stimulating some of those dormant buds down there to send up a spear, and so you can continue harvesting. Generally, we suggest harvesting up to about the 4th of July or pencil diameter spears. That's kind of a deciding factor.
All right. Sure. Okay, great.
Thanks, and also remember, we had a call on this a few weeks back. Somebody called and was a landowner and said, you know what, a lot of people come right on our property and pick our wild asparagus, and even in the even along the roadside, and some, you know, the ownership of the land sometimes goes out to near the road, so you want to be a little careful about where you're going and picking your asparagus, or at least ask for some permission.
Yeah, that's a popular thing, foraging for that wild asparagus. You know, people have spots marked and everything else, but you are right, the landowner has first dibs on those, that material.
Thanks again, Terry. Jeff in McFarland, your turn. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. I'm going to go out and do some pruning of lilac bushes out at my mom's.
Okay.
They're probably, 30 years plus old. Mm-hmm. I started thinning them out every other year, and six years ago, this is, I've done them twice, thinned out like a third of the heavy.
Right down to the bottom?
Right down to the bottom.
Good.
Got right.
The new sprouts, or whatever you call them, coming up. Now that the main plant is probably 12 to 15 feet tall. They were planted as like a hedgerow or a privacy for the street. And this is like the last rotation for pruning. And I'm afraid that if I take out that last third, there's still so much of the main plant up there. Is the new suckers or whatever coming up from the bottom, are they going to bloom for next year?
Yes, yes, they will bloom for next year as long as they have full sunlight, because sometimes people plant a large tree, eventually it shades that area, and so the production goes down. But this would be the right time to be removing that last segment, because, again, flower bud initiation on the lilacs is going to happen now in June. For those flowers, we see next spring. So I'd go in there and remove that last third. Usually the 3-year-old wood and beyond is what starts producing flowers. And if you've done it, as you've suggested, there should be some 3-year-old shoots there that should have some flowers.
I'm afraid that there's not enough growth there for her privacy in the backyard if I take out the rest of the large stuff.
Yeah.
With the large stuff, can I cut that back to, say, 8 feet? Will that hurt the plant?
Well, you're going to cut it back. It's probably going to look a little ugly because you got those stumps sitting there. What I would suggest doing is coming back in with a fertilizer program. There's some very good bulletin on caring for deciduous shrubs. In there, it'll talk about the rejuvenation process, which sounds like you're doing appropriately, but also come back with a fertilizer program. It'll stimulate the existing new vegetation they have there to kind of stool out and provide that privacy you're looking for.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Can I ask a question on asparagus quick?
Sure.
We had some volunteer asparagus plants, I guess you could say. I think the the birds did a little transplanting of seeds into other flower beds.
Sure.
And so this the spring when I was doing our annual planting, I dug out those new little asparagus baby plants. Got a lot of dirt around the base. I've got them in 5-gallon buckets right now. Can I just transplant those into a more desirable area of the yard?
Yep, and there's a good bulletin. At least Minnesota has one on growing asparagus that goes into some detail. But dig a good trench, put in about 6-8 inches of good compost because they like that organic matter, and then set those transplants that you have above that. Space them out about 2 feet within the row, and eventually have a solid row of asparagus.
Okay.
All right.
Very good. Yeah, the birds have done us a great favor.
You bet.
One thing, when a lot of the cultured ones that we purchase are actually male plants, and so they don't produce seeds. Hmm. The seeds you have there, you have a 50-50 chance of a male or a female, so you may have continued reproduction of asparagus if you have a number of female plants.
Well, I hope they come from our neighbor's asparagus bed because they got the best stuff over there.
Well,
we want to get our own bed going.
There's some great asparagus out there now, you know, that... Boy, it's awfully tempting to advise you to go ahead and order some of those really good ones. Jersey, what is it, Jersey King or something like that?
Yes, Jersey King. That's a kind of a purplish one, I believe. And then, in fact, that one's a male line. It's very productive in terms of overall yields.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Norman in Wausau, it is your turn. Hi, Norm.
Tom, Larry, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question that's a little redundant because you covered it in part, but here's the situation. I've got a white cedar at the corner of the house, and it's getting too tall and too bushy. How much can I trim that back, or do I have to just take it out?
Well, I hate to tell you this, but you're taking it out might be your best bet. Cedars, as well as other evergreens, if you start cutting branches back past the green growth, they often do not stool out, and so you're going to have a ugly brown stub sitting there. So usually with those, recommend taking them out, starting over with a smaller plant.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling. Bridget in Madison. Hi to you.
Hi. I'm calling about the hollyhock.
Okay.
I have a hint for the fellow with the leaves that are starting to get lacy.
Okay.
I've got a little patch of hollyhocks that's been coming up for 10 or 12 years. I don't do a thing to it. It seeds itself. And what happens is I start checking it this time of year, and about 3 days ago I saw the beginnings of those little holes. And what I do is take a little spray bottle, put in some dishwashing detergent, add water, go out and spray it, and that's been working for a long time now.
That's wonderful.
So even though he started it, I would spray him top and bottom. What's he got to lose?
Yeah.
Right. And there are other insecticidal soaps that will do very well for you. They're on the market. Sometimes we found that certain dishwasher detergents, even though they work, there are some that work better than others. And as when Phil is your guest, he'll explain to you it has to do with the phosphates that are in that soap.
Ah, okay.
And so that's why some are good and some are okay.
Well, but I don't have a dishwasher, so I have dishwashing detergent.
That's right.
The kind that you do it when you do it yourself.
Right.
Well, what kind do you use?
I think it's Oxy something or something with an Oxy in it. I don't know. I just go by the picture on it. I'm actually looking at the hollyhock now.
Okay.
So I'm not near the dish detergent.
Okay.
And you brought up a very good point. Start early. Most people, when they see the problems, by then either the insect is so large that it's going to take the whole kitchen sink and a couple of dishes to knock
them out. Well, this just seems to stop it in their tracks. It's kind of scary that I'm sticking my hands in that stuff every day, but they're still there.
Thanks, Bridget.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. All right. Let's go to Sue, I think, is next in Cronenwetter. Hi, Sue. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call.
And how can we help you today?
I have a question on a clematis.
Okay.
Last year I planted my first clematis, and it grew 8 feet tall, had lots of flowers, not real bushy, but it looked real healthy. This year, by the time I got around to that flower bed, it would look dead at the bottom, but about 6-7 feet up, it was green and leafy, and so it's growing up high, but nothing down low. Should I have cut that back last fall? Is there anything I can do now?
Well, you're going to have some of the growth up above, and that all is dependent on the type of winter conditions that we have. You apparently have a variety that's fairly hardy, and that's why some of the above portions survived.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, some of the types that we have out there will die back almost to the ground. I would water the plant, fertilize it, and watch, and you should have some new shoots coming from the base.
Nothing's coming there right now, but I'll keep looking at it.
Okay.
Sue, where's Cronenwetter located?
It's a suburb of Wausau.
Suburb of Wausau. Well, one of my students' name is Ann Cronenwetter, and is her name, and so I was just wondering, right out of Wausau.
Just south between Wausau and Mosinee.
All right. Thanks, Sue.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Kathy in Appleton, you're next. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thank you much. I have a question in regards to my river birch. This is the first year. I planted it about four or five years ago. It's growing just really wonderfully. But this year I have round, almost like seed-type nutlets is what I found on the Internet. And they're all over the branches. You know, this tree has not been stressed. So I'm wondering why this year, is there anything to do about them? And what is their purpose?
Okay, first of all, they look like little pine cones.
They're round. They're not the catkins, but they're round, perhaps about half to 5/8 of an inch in length, and not quite as wide. Little rough texture to them. They're not smooth at all.
Are they green or black?
Right now they're green.
Okay, those are catkins, seed producing, and you're 5 years out, so that's probably the tree has gotten old enough that it can start producing seeds. That's
okay.
What I would guess it is.
Mm-hmm.
But these aren't long, because I did have catkins on the tree last year.
Yeah.
And they were long and slender, like you've seen on, I think, some of the popples and
right.
and such will have. But these are very round,
right.
round to oval.
Right.
That's what you'd expect, wouldn't it?
That's what you have. But at different times of the season, you see different things. The catkins are both male and female, and so during
okay.
the blooming period early in the spring, you find those long, lacy ones laying around just like on the popples and everything else. That was that. But what's left you have there are the female catkins, which are producing the seeds, and they're very tight and hard right now. And usually sometime in late August, September, they'll start opening up and releasing their seeds.
Okay, so are these going to develop into those long ones, or are
no.
these... No.
Nope.
The long ones should have been there and gone because that was a spring flowering process.
Yep, and those were off. Okay, so does this mean that my tree is stressed because I really do a good job of watering?
No, your tree is not stressed. It has just reached teenage puberty and starting to produce seeds.
Okay, so these are going to fall off then eventually.
Yes.
Very good.
Thanks,
well,
Kathy.
Thank you.
Talk to you again, I betcha. Bob in Wauwatosa, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. Great program as usual.
Thank you.
We have a curbside hackberry tree. It's three and a half feet from the curb and about 5 inches in diameter, growing like a weed. And I'd like to do a little mulched area around the tree, but I'm not sure how to approach this. Right now, the tree has got grass growing up to within about a foot of it all the way around, and then there's just bare earth. And there are some surface roots on a couple of sides of the tree going out as far as 18 inches. I guess my main question is, I'm not sure whether in applying mulch around the tree, whether I should dig out the grass out, 2 or 3 feet. That's probably a bad idea because I might injure some roots.
Yeah. What I would do is you want to get rid of the grass, and a couple ways of doing that is to just simply lay down some cut the grass very short.
Uh-huh.
Lay down some newspaper and cover it with bark chip mulch right away.
Okay.
And this will smother out the grasses that are there. There's some very good bulletins on mulching or on planting trees, but we're looking at about 3-4 inches of mulch. I think the roots that you're describing are part of the root flare without seeing it. I'm just guessing, but they kind of look like a ridge that comes right off of the trunk and
yes.
kind of goes down. What you want to do is kind of mulch in between that. Those are kind of in a phase between being a root and being trunk, and so sometimes we don't want to really cover those up.
Okay. Okay.
That's part of the root flare.
So you would advise not trying to dig out any
grass? No, I would just simply mow the grass very, very short.
Yeah.
You can put some of the mulch, fiber compounds. I like using newspaper because it deteriorates.
Sure.
And it also controls any of the grass and weed seeds. And by putting it over, wetting it down, that'll kind of hold in place and you're all set.
And you want me to leave those exposed roots exposed?
Yeah, if you could.
Yep.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Let's turn to Chris in La Crosse next. Hi, Chris.
Hi, good morning. I bought a house a couple of years ago. I've got two pine trees over on one side of the yard. They're probably about 15 to 18 feet tall. They're the same age, the same type. They're a real small cones, very dense, clustering up the cones. What's going on is one of the trees is real nice and healthy, and the other one is real scraggly, very, some of the wood looks like it's dead, but then there'll be green needles here and there. excuse me. Last year in the fall, I took out some kind of tree, shrubby kind of plant that had grown up through one side of the tree, through the branches, and had gotten as high as maybe eight feet high, and I saw those right down to the ground. But now this year there's feelers coming up through the ground, I guess, new growth. Is that something that would have like tapped into the tree's roots and is affecting it? Is there any way to save that tree, or is it a lost cause?
Is it a spruce tree that you have?
Short
needles?
No, it's an evergreen, a pine tree.
Yeah, but does it have short needles on it, single needles? Does it look like a Christmas tree?
Right, yeah, sorry.
Okay. The reason I'm trying to narrow it down is because there are certain diseases. Okay, first of all, the shrubbery that you had growing in there probably were keeping it fairly moist in that evergreen, and so we had disease problems, and that's why it's looking scraggly. The disease is probably still there, and some decision you might want to make is just taking out the sick one because he's only going to later infect the other tree. And then there are certain spruces that are more prevalent to the disease than the others. The blue spruce are very prevalent to disease problems.
Okay.
Also, it didn't tap into the root system. All the suckers you have coming up are just from the shrubbery that you had there. There's a few ways of controlling that. You could try using some brush killer materials, trying not to get it on the tree, because brush killers don't care if it's an evergreen or a deciduous tree. Or you could cover it with, like we suggested, getting an old carpet for a while, covering that area and throwing some bark chips over it and then pulling the carpet off and just using the bark chips. But that would smother out the shrubbery.
Okay. And then just the other symptom I wanted to give you about this tree, I'd like to keep it if I could because it looks aesthetically, it looks right with the other tree and where they are in the yard. If I get rid of it, I'll have to put something else in there. But some of the wood does have lichen growing on it. And, the tree just looks very scraggly, real rough. I mean, is there any chance at all that it would come back, or would I just be better off to...
I think you're better off to say goodbye to that tree.
Yeah, I think in the long run you'd be farther ahead. The lichens on there, well, it all depends. It could be mushrooms. Lichens are a healthy thing. They're growing on, healthy areas. But if it's actually mushroom material, it's secondary growth where it's starting to eat away on the dead bark or dead wood that's already there on that spruce tree.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Bob Tomich, our guest today, senior lecturer, UW-Madison and Extension horticulturist. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with Bob Tomich on this edition of Garden Talk. Glad to have you listening in. We'll go right to the phones again and to Bob in Beloit. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I've got two questions.
Okay.
One is I prefer to foliar feed my vegetables and flowers. And how do you adjust for time? Do you do it every day, every week, twice a week, once?
Okay.
How often would you foliar feed?
Foliar feeding.
Yeah. Usually the product that you purchased is going to have you have descriptions on there when to do it. And it has to do with the composition of the product that you're spraying on the plant material. So follow those recommendations, unless you're making up your own brew and then you're on your own. one thing with foliar feeding, leaves aren't designed to really absorb a lot of the nutrients, but you're getting a double help there because whatever washes off or falls to the ground is often absorbed through the root system there. So you're getting a double feeding application that way.
Okay.
I'm new at growing corn, and it's up about 12, 14 inches, and there are little spots. Maybe it looks like it might be an insect, about anywhere from a quarter inch long to an inch and a half long in most of the leaves. Is that an insect or a burn, or do you have any idea what that might be?
Is it moving?
No. It's there's nothing there except the scar.
Well, it could be a lot of things. What it could be from is some of the foliar feeding that you're doing. If it's too strong of a mixture, it'll cause some leaf browning usually and streaking.
So that might be the situation.
With corn, it gets down into the whorl when you place it. So there's actually water sitting down in the whorl there for a while, water, whatever solution you made. And so it's concentrating. You don't see it until that leaf emerges out of that stalk far enough. So that's, I'm guessing, with your foliar feeding idea, that's probably what's happening there is what we call is fertilizer burn.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Mike in Rice Lake, on to you now. Hi, Mike.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Two questions. I have some ferns. I don't know what kind they are growing on the north side of my house, just the regular wood ferns. And something in the last 2 years has just been eating them, the leaves, down to a skeleton. Any idea what's causing that and how to save the plants, basically? Or?
So what's the stems are still there?
Yep. Just like, but there's no, you know, it's just a bare, you know, the bare stem is all that's left by the time they get rid of it. And I've looked really close, and I can't see anything on it, eating it, but.
Yep. I'm a little lost at that one, because I really, but I would take a guess at, do you have mulch around the area?
Nope.
Nope. Sometimes slugs and that will come up and feed. And one thing to check is go out there at night, after it gets dark, with your flashlight and look around, and sometimes you'll find some of those critters, they crawl in during the daytime, and when it's cool and moist, they crawl out there and feed. If you capture some of those, send them down to us, or take a digital picture and get it over to your extension office, and they'll mail it down, and with that, we can kind of identify what the problem is.
What time of night, basically?
I would say probably around 10 o'clock.
Okay.
And if you want to really bring them out, water the ferns down a little bit just as it starts to get dark, and then shut the water off so it's nice and quiet. Give them about an hour, and then they like that real nice, moist environment, and they'll come out.
Okay. The second thing is I have a few apple trees, and some of them, I don't remember which exactly, get like dark streaks on the apples. It doesn't seem to go any deeper than the skin, as I recall, but is that something to be concerned with, or can you treat that as well?
Dark streaks is like kind of a blackish bloom on it?
They're not a bloom. More like streaks, you know. It just makes the apple unpleasant look.
Yeah, is it brownish, brownish streaks?
Brownish black.
I'm going to guess on that one. It's an older apple tree. And
no, what do you mean by older? I planted about maybe 5 years ago.
Oh, then they're not that old. I'm guessing what it might be is mites on there, on the tree itself. And if that's the case, but send in a sample or take it over to the extension office when you actually see it, because it could be a lot of things. Usually with mites, that's a dormant oil issue. Most times I tell people don't use dormant oils unless you have a problem like you might be. And it looks like somebody took sandpaper to the apple, either on the petal end or on the stem end, braised a little bit, and it's kind of a brownish scar tissue that we usually see.
This is streaks all the side of the apple. I mean, you know, like eighth-inch, three-quarter-inch wide streaks up and down, you know, all around the apple. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Indentations?
No, just streaks.
Streaks.
When you get a sample like that, get a picture of it or bring a sample into your local county extension agent over there in Barron County, and he'll get it down to us, and then we'll try to identify it, because I'm not putting the damage and the symptoms and all that together into what it might be.
All right.
Okay. Thank you much.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. And let's go to another Mike, this one in Dodgeville. Hi, Mike.
Hi there. I was just listening as I was listening to the last phone call, thinking how extraordinary difficult it is, the job you're trying to do over the radio. You're doing a fabulous job. And my question actually spins from that. You were talking about pruning lilacs. And as you're talking about that, you're obviously talking to someone who had some idea. I don't. I have some lilacs I need to trim back. And they're not producing very many flowers. And I'm wondering what actual, is it a particular diameter of plant, of stalk that I need to cut out and leave smaller ones? How does that actually, how do I choose what I trim back and what I don't?
First, are they in shade or are they in sun?
They're sort of in shade. There's a black walnut that partly shades them, and I'm thinking that's going to need to be removed because it's been damaged.
Yeah, the problem is once you remove that black walnut, sometimes the juglan left from the roots that can retard the growth of some plant materials.
Right, yeah,
but
I'm aware of that.
Let's get back to just to the what we call rejuvenation. There's a very good bulletin, and I'll let Larry pull that up, the Learning Store email. But you can Google that or go to the Learning Store, and Larry will give you that address here in the middle. He's got the computer keys. I don't. But in that, there'll be a segment on care of deciduous shrubs, and in there is the pruning process. Generally speaking, with lilacs, what you want to do is take out about one-third of the stem growth over a three-year period. So take out about one-third of the stems right as close to the ground as you possibly can. Get rid of that.
Okay.
Second year, come back in, do the second one, and then the third year, take out what's left. And by then, your shrub is down to a height of maybe 4 or 5 feet. And Larry, you've got the website up
there.
Yeah,
it's learn. It's just Learning Store, all one word, .uwex.edu.
Okay.
And then there should be some sections coming up there, and one will be trees and shrubs, and so you just kind of follow your way into that.
Right.
And you should be able to read the bulletin.
Right. As a rule, do I want to start with the biggest stems?
Yes. Yeah.
So cut out the biggest stems. Some of them are pretty, you know, maybe 2, 3, maybe even as much as 4 inches in diameter.
Yep.
So those are the ones that get cut first.
Yep. Right.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks very much for calling. Third, 3 years.
Yep.
You do it. Eileen in Ladysmith. Let's go to you next. Hi, Eileen.
Hi. I have a question about a bleeding heart that isn't right now, and I wonder if I should divide it or fertilize it. It was in a beautiful spot and produced beautiful blooms for many, many years, and this year it's very, very sparse.
Yeah. You could have a couple of problems there. An established bleeding heart usually continues to produce each year, but sometimes you get such things as the larvae from some insects, like the June beetle.
Mm-hmm.
They'll get in there and they'll start feeding on that. The best time to divide the bleeding heart is either early in the spring when they begin to growth or in the fall period. Something you might want to consider just to try would be they have insecticidal soil drenches that you can purchase at your local garden center. And what it is you mix the product with water and water the plant. And if there are some of those larvae down there, it will tend to knock them out. There could be other situations that might be happening there. Maybe it's the root system of some tree is getting around it because you've been too kind to that plant over the years, watering and flowering it. And so the roots of the tree get over there and they kind of take over the operation. So that might be. You might want to go ahead, and if it's looking so poorly, dig it out, dig a nice soil ball and move it into a nice spot next to your garden where you can take care of it a little bit more, change its environment, and maybe then it'll perk up.
Okay, well, it's a beautiful-looking plant, the greenery. It just isn't producing many blooms this year.
Yes, some of that cold temperature we had, the bleeding heart starts growing very early in the year. And those flower buds are on those new developing stems, and so that might have some impact on what you have there.
Okay.
If the plant is looking healthy, then just wait till next spring and divide it then.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Eileen, for calling. And Scott in Eau Claire, your turn now. Hi, Scott.
Hi, guys. Got a question on Jack and the Puppets. I'll probably get myself in trouble, but I have a bunch in the backyard under some pine trees, so I dug one up here. Oh, in April, brought it in the house because it had a bunch of the hooded iris lily, whatever you want to call it, sprouts on it,
mm-hmm.
with the filament inside, and it hasn't produced anymore. And I've put gravel first in the flower pot, and then some clay soil, and some cedar chips on top, and it's almost 4 feet tall. What can I do to get it to produce more of those
lily flowers, I guess, if you want to call it.
Well, that only happens once in the spring.
Okay. Right now, they have little green seeds on where that flower was.
Well, then if you can keep it and they'll turn red afterwards. They're also poisonous. I just thought I'd drop that.
Yep, I heard that too.
But, you could, as long as you've got it growing, sounds like a healthy environment. It isn't going to, they only flower once with a single flower. That's the way the plant is. But if you can grow that plant now through the entire growing season and probably in August or September, those seeds will turn reddish, and then plant them back out and you'll generate a few more plants.
Because it's sending up more sprouts now, and they're 6-8 inches tall, and they do not have any.
Right. Those are what the Jack in the Pulpit is a bulb, and what it does is it forms little bulblets. You've been really nice to it, so it's producing lots of little bulblets, and they're sending up little shoots. And what's going to be unique about that factor is if you were to set that plant back out into the wild this fall, each of those little bulblets may have a flower on it next year if you've been really kind to it.
Hmm.
Okay. But I didn't know they got that big. It's almost 3/4 of an inch in diameter in the stem.
Well, they haven't got any insects and diseases to fight with in the house.
No.
That makes a big difference. The other issue that that I was trying to mention is that keeping it in the house and hoping that it's going to flower next year probably isn't going to happen because they have to go through a chilling period that nature provides and we don't. You could probably do it by placing, after the leaf tissue degenerates, placing it in your refrigerator for about 3 months and then pulling it back out and getting the growth cycle to happen again.
Thanks very much for calling. Bob Tomich, our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Bob Tomich, senior lecturer in the UW-Madison and UW Extension Horticulture area. Glad to have him along. And certainly, again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. We'll go to the phones. Wally and Prentice, you're up. Thanks for calling.
Yes, hi. Thank you for the call. My question is about a pine, although I'm not sure if it's really a Scotch pine. It's one of those that has a real crooked trunk with scaly bark and kind of crooked limbs.
How long are the needles?
Probably about 2 inches, an inch and a half.
Okay.
But what's your problem?
My question is it was real green at the beginning of the year, and then all of a sudden it started browning from the bottom all the way up to the top, and now it's all brown. Then the tree right next to it, which is the same, did the same thing, and now both are totally brown. I have a third one, and these are old trees, probably about 60 feet tall with probably 18 inches, 20 inches in diameter as far as the trunk. I'm concerned whether that might be a disease that will eventually get the third and I should knock them down.
Well, it could be.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to guess exactly what you've got going there, but with the drought that you had up there last couple of years, any trees that are stressed or old are the ones that are going to start succumbing to just, you know, dying out, and they're also more prevalent to disease situations. In any case, if you suspect it's a disease, I would get rid of the dead and dying ones in the hope that you get ahead of the whole program and maybe save one out of the whole group.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And Louise in Madison, hello to you.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about plum trees. Are they hard to grow in this area, Zone 3? I planted 4 years ago a Stanley plum and a Mount Royal. One died last year, didn't come back, and I replanted it again, and now both of them are dead. Is this too cold for plum trees?
Well, the two varieties that you suggested are kind of borderline. In my experience, Terrell Roper will say that they should do fairly well down here. But there are some other varieties out there. There's an Alderman, which the University of Minnesota has released in the 80s, excellent plum. There's some of the old series that came out of South Dakota, such as Pipestone and Salpa.
Pipestone?
Wynetta, which is another Minnesota release. There are some pretty good. Wynetta, like Wynetta,
yeah.
Minnesota.
Okay.
And La Crescent's another one. Those are all some
varieties. Which one was the last?
La Crescent.
La Crescent.
like the city.
Okay, yeah. And how soon should they set fruit?
They usually, plums start producing fruit at about 5 years after you set them out.
5 years. Is that the same with pear trees? I planted at the same time two pears, and they did flower the first year, and they came from the lot, but never again.
Yeah.
So do you need to prune them more? So
yeah, pears you need to prune, and you also need to get the branches to grow horizontal. If they grow upright, which they
yeah.
like to do, once they get too tall, and then you can't do anything with them. We need to go through or suggest a training process for any of the fruit trees, in that you select your scaffold branch maybe at 3 or 4 feet from the ground and try to get it growing at a horizontal position. There's some very good bulletins on growing apples in Wisconsin and growing plums in Wisconsin. That's at the Learning Store. Or if you don't have access to a computer, go down to your local extension office, and it will suggest not only varieties that will be hardy for your area, but it also suggests the training process so you get fruit coming off of that. I know personal experience with pears. If you don't do anything, sometimes you have to wait 12 years. And
oh.
As Larry and I start looking, we laugh at 12 years. But you could. I've got some, and by training the branches in a horizontal fashion, you can usually get fruit at 4 or 5 years easy.
Yeah, and the sour cherries?
Sour cherries, there's Meteor, North Star, two good standbys. Montmorency, I think, does well along Door County and places like that.
I have one Meteor cherry.
Yes.
That's okay, yeah?
Yes.
But do you need to prune it too?
Yeah, you should try to keep them fairly open so that the breeze blows through there. You see Zone 3. Are you in Madison or where?
Madison.
No, it's in Richland Center
Richland.
I have it on the farm.
That's still not that cold up there.
No. would be okay. Yeah.
Meteor will do it.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Louise. And Kate in Menasha, we go to you now. Hi, Kate.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have some beautiful irises in a front west facing flower bed, but I mulch with a cedar mulch every year, but some of the irises are getting like mushy buds, and on the same stalk of which has the mushy yellow bud, there will be a perfectly good bud, and in this bed, which has plenty of sunshine, the plant right next door to the one that I'm describing will be just fine. So I'm wondering what could the problem be?
Yeah, I'm seeing that this year.
Oh.
And I think it had to do with the fact that iris are one of those things that start coming up early, and then we had that cold.
Oh.
And it might have damaged some of the buds in that they do not fully open.
Right.
They're kind of slightly paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that even on some of my own. And what's interesting is I have one variety that just is beautiful this year, no damage. And then I have some of the more delicate types, the newer, showier ones. You might get one good bloom out of it, and normally you have 5 or 6.
Yeah.
And the other ones just never completely fully open. And I think it had to do with some of the cold injury that happened there.
Okay.
I was predicting that we would probably see that on peonies and a number of other plants this year. And it did come true. Some of the peonies are a little poorly flowered this year compared to other years.
Okay.
Some are excellent. And
we've
I guess
got some great ones at home.
It depends on the stage of development and the variety that you have.
So that's actually good news, and they'll probably be okay
next year.
They
should be okay unless we have another reoccurrence of this year's winter.
Okay, well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for calling. I appreciate your call. You know, our entire flower beds, or most of them anyway, look much better this year than they have in past years, and that could be because we're having a remodeling job on our home, and there's guys in the back next to the flower beds all the time, which are keeping the rabbits and everything else out of there. Could well be. Let's go to Rick in Milwaukee. Hi, Rick. Thank you for calling.
Hi. A question about how Roundup works, and then a second question on high-bush cranberry. On Roundup, the target plant's roots touching underground the roots of other plants, could those other plants have a collateral damage?
No, they shouldn't. They should not.
Is it possible, though?
I haven't heard of that, because what it does is the Roundup goes into the plant through the leaf tissue systemically, and unless the roots are grafted together, you know, same species of plants, you shouldn't have that other effect. But when you're spraying your target plant, and if there's any vapors or slight mist that go over to your plant that you want to save, it doesn't make any difference. The herbicide is there.
So it's more likely that
it could be a drift. It could be a drift issue or something like that.
Okay, I'm having interference here, but I'll just quickly ask you a question about a high bush cranberry that has sort of a dieback. Each year there's more of the plant dying back on top.
Yeah, and do some of the whole stems of that shrub fall over? No.
It's just simply more branches are dead at the beginning of each spring.
Yeah. Take one of the dead branches or the stem that you have there, cut it open and see if there's a hole in the center.
Uh-huh.
If that's the case, what you have is viburnum borer. It's a insect that lays an egg and then junior kind of eats on the center part. Generally, with the one that you have, the flowering cranberry, during the summer months, you'll see a whole stem just kind of start leaning over, and where it touches the ground, sometimes they'll even root there. But what it is as the larvae is burrowing out the center, it's weakening that stem and it falls over. If that's the case, there are some insecticides, but you have to use them right at the right time when they're laying their eggs. And if you go on a website, find something out on one of the extension bulletins on viburnum borer, it'll give you some of those key times of the year to watch.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing you might have, and it could be just the decline of an old shrub. It's been there for so many years. Some shrubs have a life of maybe 15 or 20 years, and you probably reach that stage.
Good luck, Rick. Thank you very much for calling. We had an email, and I should mention you can email us with your questions at talk@wpr.org. Let's see, who do we have here? I'm not sure the name of the person, but anyway, the person says, I have four bird's nest spruce shrubs. They're about 3 years old. One developed a dead area and then lost all its needles in about a week. Another has now developed a dead branch, and I'm worried that that one's going to die too. They're on the west side of the house. Afternoon sun isn't too damp. Flowers they have there are doing fine. What might be killing them?
Well, my first guess would be some type of fungal disease where it takes out a whole branch. And those diseases come from, you know, our native spruces that we have. The bird's nests are actually, or those type of spruce, are usually taken from witch's brooms and other stuff found in the wild. And then through grafting, they can get that to happen. But I'm guessing it might be some fungal problem. You could send a sample into the pathology lab and send them material that's just starting to die or yellow, because Brian can culture out what the problem might be and then give you some fungal recommendations.
Yep. Just go to your – you could turn it in through the extension office?
You go through the extension office or even go onto the plant pathology website, and he has a segment in there that a link for submitting samples.
Okay. Dee in Kenosha, it's your turn now. Hi, Dee.
Oh, hi. Good afternoon. Well, my first question has to do with columbine. The birds planted some columbine in my yard a few years back, and when the little plants came up, I transplanted them around. Well, now they're getting up there, and the flowers are starting to fall off, and they're making the seed pods. When is the best time to plant the seeds?
As soon as the pods open, and you're going to have a little trick there, because one day you're going to come there and they're open.
Yeah. And they're
some people trap the seeds by taking a nylon stocking or some mesh type gauze and actually covering the plant as the petals begin to drop from the plant. That allows that pod to complete its maturation process. And as the seeds are emitted, then they can collect the seeds and plant them out.
Okay. And my other thing was a comment. A woman called earlier about the river birches, and we planted two maybe 3-4 years ago. One is about 20 feet tall. The other is 15 feet tall. And the little one I always worried about, and they're in the middle of the lawn, but we do have an area around them, so they're protected from the lawnmower, and they're mulched. But the one had all the seed pods on it. Well, this year I was looking out the window, saw something yellow flicker by. Well, here comes a pair of
finches.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have hung out all kinds of different finch seed feeders, and they never came by. I wound up taking them apart and feed them to all the neighborhood birds, who, by the way, kill all the bugs in the area.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, within half an hour, I had 14 finches in the tree feeding on those little seed pods. So tell her, and the tree looks gorgeous now. It's healthy. So tell her to hang in there and watch for finches.
Yeah.
Because the little birds that like those seeds.
That's a great story. Thanks.
I never thought of that as the kind of tree you would plant for birds. I have a lot of plants in the yard for them,
That worked.
It worked.
Thanks, Dee. Yeah, thanks, Dee. Thanks. That's a good story. Good thing to remember. Mary and Edgar, it's your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Say, I have a question about the ash trees. Now, Edgar at one time was full of elm trees, which, of course, all of them had to be destroyed. And so it was suggested that replace them with ash.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now every year we have all this leaf dropping, and there are ash leaves all over the sidewalks, all over the street, and in my yard, which I have planted several. And I don't know, they just seem to shrivel up and they get a brown spot at the end of the leaf.
Yep. That discussion came up last week when we were meeting with our ag agents, and this year it seems to be more prevalent than other years.
Yes.
They're actually raking the lawns underneath some of the ash.
Yes.
This is a natural occurrence that happens about this time of the year. It's defoliation, and we've looked for insects, we've looked for diseases, and we haven't found any, but it's a physiological problem. And the plant seems to grow out of it with its regrowth phase here, which should be starting here now
it recovers.
Days. Yep.
But it leaves such a mess.
It's a natural phenomenon.
And I wouldn't be planting any more ash for now.
I wouldn't deter people.
No, I do have two Marshall seedless ash that don't seem to be as affected.
Well, see, that could be a different species of plant. There's about four different species, and there's also selected cultivars.
Uh-huh.
Some are more prevalent than others.
Okay. All right. So in other words, they're not going to die until the borer comes, right?
Well, the borer isn't moving as fast as we thought. There's some interesting research coming out on that.
Good.
At one time, we thought it would move 20, 30 miles a year, and we're finding that it moves less than a half in areas where it is, and they've been doing a very good job of containing it. And Chris Williamson, who does the emerald ash borer information, was online this morning, and he's just updated the website, so there's a lot of good reading material there.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking at some insecticides that have been approved in other states that are applied to the soil. It's a systemic. So if the larvae happen to be the eggs and then larvae, they're usually eliminated at an early stage. So this may be a problem that we can keep ahead of.
Okay.
That would be wonderful. That would be wonderful. Thanks, Mary. But I guess, and you say, well, don't discourage people from planting ash. But I think my point was going to be, with so many ash trees, why not plant some other types of trees to have a
very good point. We were looking for something that was fast growing after the elm destruction in the 70s, and ash was a very easy and inexpensive way to do it. We encourage people to have diversity in their yard so that if you have a couple of maples, a couple of oak, some disease comes through and hits something, it's not going to take out all your trees. Back in the late 70s, we were doing some analysis of some trees, and River Falls happened to be one of those where they did a census. 75% of the trees in the city were elms. So you can imagine the devastation they had there over a period of time. So now we have more diversification in the tree species that we do have, but there's a lot on the market. There's many different types of maples that are there. They've made selections on male selections of trees, so you don't have. That's why you have the seedless ash and just a male tree. But there's a number of things, and so lindens, and of course we plant a linden, then we have gypsy moth. They like that one, but having diversity kind of gives you a little opportunity to keep ahead of the ball game in case we have somebody severe eradication issue.
Melissa in Beloit, your turn. Hi, Melissa.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is about a fuchsia plant. Last year I killed one almost instantly, and I got one for Mother's Day this year, and it was doing great for a couple of days, then started dropping flowers. And the leaves look fine. It's just I don't have any flowers on it now.
Is it a hanging basket?
Yes.
Okay.
And I do have it indoors because last year I took it outdoors, and like I said, it died like right away.
Well, you've got to, usually when you move plants from indoors to outdoors, and remember they grew in a greenhouse, you move it outside, and you're going to have some flower loss, and the flower loss you're experiencing even inside is the result of just a change in environment, and it will initiate some new flower buds, so you can grow it inside. Outside, the plants dry out unless you have a good watering system, and that plant probably requires watering morning and night to keep it in a healthy stage. A couple of other things. Sometimes you want to increase the soil ball that it's growing in so it holds the moisture. Okay. And there's some very innovative watering systems that are coming available now that you can put it in your hanging basket and have a little bit of success. Also, sun shining on a hanging basket sometimes can be detrimental on very hot days. It raises the temperature where some of the roots will begin to kill off on the sunny side of that basket. So
right. That's why I brought it
in. It's just the environment that you're dealing with.
Okay, so there's no, I looked it up on the internet and they said, well, use this kind of fertilizer, use this kind of fertilizer. And my husband is not against fertilizer, but he doesn't like putting that kind of stuff on our plants. So I haven't done that yet, but...
Your whole issue there with losing of petals or flowers has to do with the change of environment from a greenhouse to a drier house condition.
Okay.
So once it acclimates to that, whether you're hanging it outside or inside, it should come back into flowering as long as you keep it watered and not overwatered.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Sounds good, thank you.
And Marcia in Racine, your turn. Hi, Marcia.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions. Our yard was professionally landscaped last summer, and with a number of evergreens. And this year, I've noticed that the interior of the two Alberta spruce and the other evergreens in the front are brown. Now, the tips are green. The landscaper told me that this was third-year growth and nothing to worry about. However, someone else told me that evergreens need acid and told me to put Miracle-Gro Muracid on the trees. What is your opinion on this?
Well, your landscaper is probably closer to the right than anybody.
Okay.
Keep in mind what I said early in the program is that most needles on a tree only last about a year and a half.
Okay.
And when they're replanted like that, they go through some stress, and so and some needles may stay on 2.5 years. But in a transplanting situation, they're stressed, and so you're going to have that browning out in the center part.
Okay.
Hopefully with the regular watering more than the fall fertilizing, because most people tend to over-fertilize. But water once a week, especially now we've had dry temperatures, with slow watering will help out. It'll get that new growth growing, and that should kind of mask over that dead area in the center.
Okay. Also, also planted last year was a redbud tree, which is about probably 4 feet tall right now, and about a quarter of the branches are bare this year. Should I prune those? I'm thinking we might have had some winter damage from the snowstorm.
Yes, sir.
Do you think they'll come back, or should I prune those off?
There's no leaf tissue on it. They're dead.
I don't believe so. I was going to wait another couple weeks and then prune them back.
Just take your fingernail and kind of scrape the bark away. If it looks greenish, it's still alive, but it should send out some new shoots.
Okay.
Red bud, you're right, is a very tender. We're at the border for growing in terms of winter survival. And so we do experience dieback on some of those types of plants.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks very much for calling. And Kathleen, you have a quick question.
Yes, I do have a quick one. My neighbor and I both have young oak trees, and they're only one is, I think, about 6 feet tall. The other's probably about 7 to 8. And with the last frost, it killed the young flower leaves that had come out. And we're wondering if we have to wait till next year for them to come back or if they will re-leaf.
Where are you located?
Fifield.
Oh, yeah. You had a bad frost there 2 weeks ago. It was 21 degrees we had on our morning report, and that would have been so it must have been the 17th. They should re-leaf out. They will this year. Sometimes it takes a little bit, but if they don't leaf out this year, I'd replant.
Okay.
They're dead.
They're okay.
But I've even seen it was with frosts like that were popple trees, which we always feel kind of, that's the plant that survives anything. I've seen leaves turn black in July with frost.
Thanks for calling, Kathleen. And Bob, thank you so much. You'll be back again, I hope, and be with us.
We can pick another date.
Well, all right, we'll do that. Bob Tomich, senior lecturer in the UW-Madison and UW Extension horticulture area. Glad to have him with us. And again, Karen Johansson of Johansson's Greenhouses in Madison will be with us next week on Garden Talk. Thanks for listening. Stay with us.